Elected officials like yourself often hear directly from their constituents when it comes to hot button issues like this, like masking in schools. What kind of feedback have you been getting from people in the Tantramar, Memram Cook area about the decision by the provincial government to re remove these restrictions or protections, such as the mask mandate?
I've been hearing overwhelmingly from people who wish that that hadn't happened, who are really concerned about the safety of their children going to school. And I've also heard from teachers, I'd say from around the province as well, who feel that they have been left unprotected. And there's a real sense of feeling abandoned. That, in abandoning this important public health tool, that the government has also abandoned, students and teachers and abandoned our communities and the most vulnerable in our communities. I think it's important to remember that just because the government removed these protections, the pandemic didn't end, and in fact, case counts have gone up. Hospitalizations and deaths are still happening, and the hospital system never left the red alert phase. So they are under a lot of stress as well.
I think it's fair to say that this is a somewhat polarizing issue. On one hand, you have people warning that people's health is at stake because of the spread of COVID-19 in schools, particularly for people who are immunocompromised. Then again, we've also heard from some parents who insist that this should be a personal choice. You probably recall in February during the so-called Freedom Convoy, protesters were outside the Tantramar Regional High School calling for children to be unmasked. I've even seen examples on social media of people saying masking children is a form of child abuse. What's your reaction to these kinds of comments and the level of division we're seeing over these kinds of issues?
It is really polarizing, and there are extremely strong feelings. The science says that masks help to filter the air and help to stop things like the COVID virus from entering our bodies, and that's why it's important. And I think it's we can look at other places. Like in Japan, it's common practice for people, if they have a cold, they have some symptoms. This is pre-pandemic, to put on a mask. Like doctors and nurses and all kinds of people who work in certain situations have been wearing masks regularly in their jobs to prevent spread of disease. This is a public health tool that we can use to help protect ourselves, to protect people around us, and it's been a really important tool, and it's unfortunate that it's been abandoned too soon. It's not going to be forever. The pandemic won't last forever, but we're still right in the middle of it, and so it's really important that we continue to do everything we can, because this can be a life or death situation for some people, and we still are learning about the impacts of long COVID. So the science is still coming in showing things like an increased risk of developing diabetes. There are other impacts that are showing up from cognitive impacts. Basically, this is not a cold. That's not what we're dealing with here. Unfortunately, the premier has gone on the radio and said stuff to that effect, which is misleading and irresponsible.
Now, there have been questions over who is actually responsible for the decision on masking in schools. Health Minister Dorothy Shepherd and Premier Blaine Higgs have both said the Minister of Education has the right to reintroduce masking in schools, according to reporting in the Telegraph Journal last month. And the Advocates report also notes that either the Chief Medical Officer of Health or the Minister of Education could issue that kind of order. Yet at the same time, Education Minister Dominic Carty has stated that he's deferring to recommendations by public health. What do you think about the way that this has played out, and where does the responsibility lie, in your view?
Honestly, it's been embarrassing for the Higgs government to handle it this way, to just point the finger and further confuse the issue. And it feels like no one wants to be accountable for this really important decision that has had really significant impacts. And I don't understand why the Higgs government would want to abandon this layered approach that we've been told for the whole pandemic is important. Wash your hands, physical distancing, wear a mask, get vaccinated, all of these things. We've been told that we need this layered approach. And unfortunately, they abandoned all of these layers except for vaccination, but they aren't even rolling it out as much as they could. They aren't having clinics and schools, for example, to make sure it's really accessible. They've gotten rid of the data, the masking, and even testing is hard to come by. Rapid testing and PCR testing have both been significantly limited. I've called on both, you know, public health and the Minister of Education to take action to be responsible for this. And as you pointed out in the report, it could be either Minister Carty or the Chief Medical Officer of Health who could take action. And unfortunately, it's looking like they're not going to. But there were many good recommendations laid out in this report, and it will be extremely disappointing if they don't implement them, and not just disappointing, risky.
And of course, you know, for people who haven't read the report itself, it doesn't actually make a determination about whether or not there should be a mask mandate permanently, but suggests that the government revert to the status quo that existed when the flawed decision, that's a quote from the report, to lift the mandate was made, and work on a final decision that's properly researched. So it points to the example of Nova Scotia, for example, where a mask mandate will continue in schools until May 21st, when the decision will be reviewed. Do you see Nova Scotia as an example for New Brunswick to follow?
Yes. Well, and even in that, they were going to get rid of masking in schools, and then they changed their mind earlier on as well. So yes, I think that makes sense. And in the report, it says that Mr. Lamrock had hoped to be able to provide to secure a full explanation that was really, clearly reasoned, and that they couldn't find that. So unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a clear evidence-based, clearly reasoned explanation. And so, yeah, he's saying, okay, well, bring back masking and do your work, do what you should have done from the beginning. But there are other recommendations, like making sure rapid tests are available. And this is something that I've been calling for a long time. It is unacceptable that we don't have access to testing. It's especially difficult in rural areas, where if you need to have symptoms at this point, I don't know if they're planning to change that, but you need to have symptoms. Most people can't get a PCR test, and then you might have to wait a week to even get it. So it's just unacceptable. We've been told, okay, you need to manage the risks. They've put it, a public health issue has become individual responsibility, but they haven't even given us the tools. And this is all in the context as well of not having paid sick days for everyone, for example. There are other policies that could be in place to better support people, and the Higgs government has refused to do that.
Now, going back to factors like long COVID, and so on, I can see people from the other side of this issue saying, well, what about these studies that indicate that maybe learning or emotional development is stunted somehow by masks? And looking at that, the report by Kelly Lamrock here, it says the Chief Medical Officer of Health has looked at issues related to children's ability to learn. And just to quote from the report here, there's expert concern and negative results from the Education Early Childhood Development Department tracking of children's capacity to read and interpret facial expressions, which is an important developmental milestone. It also says the Chief Medical Officer of Health has reported, quote, mixed and inconclusive findings regarding the correlation between mask wearing and mental health indicators in older children, although this cannot be conclusively ruled out. So just any thoughts about these concerns about masking and effects it may or may not have related to children's learning and their mental health, which are concerns that you know, people have raised at these protests, I think, you know, these anti-masking protests and so on.
And the mental health and the learning environments of children need to be prioritized, and unfortunately aren't always properly supported. However, the evidence at this point is not showing that there's significant negative cognitive impacts of mask wearing on children. That's what it says from the Chief Medical Officer of Health. What I'm hearing from teachers is that the stress and chaos of the last while has created a situation where there's not really a proper learning environment. Everyone's kind of in survival mode. A lot of teachers have been out sick. A lot of students have been out sick. And there are so many factors that have impacted people's mental health and physical health during the pandemic. We've had periods of isolation. We've had big chunks of time where students haven't even been in school. This year alone, students didn't go back after the winter break, and so there are a lot of other factors going on. What we do know is that there are major risks around long COVID, around just COVID itself, and that. By taking away some of these tools like masking, easy access to testing, it's made it a lot riskier for a lot of people to engage in our society, really. And I think a lot of people feel kind of like they're disposable, like, oh, well, we're willing to sort of sacrifice you because we want to get on with certain things. Again, this isn't forever. This is for now, to try to keep people safe and protect our health, and protect the health of children and the most vulnerable in our communities.
Just wrapping up here. We also see in this report what the advocate Kelly Lamrock describes as quote unacceptable responses from school districts. That's in cases involving families with vulnerable family members. It says here in one reported case, a parent with documented needs was told to homeschool their child at their own expense and questioned as to whether cancer is a disability at law. It is, the report states. It goes on to add that under the Education Act, an alternate site has to be provided at the expense of the district if a child has a need that can't be accommodated within an ordinary classroom. So that's from the Child and Youth Advocate Kelly Lamrock's report on the inquiry into COVID-19 restrictions in schools. So your thoughts on these instances, and if you heard about anything like that happening among your constituents?
So it is unacceptable that the Department of Education, that these districts have not been following the law, that they have not been providing the appropriate accommodations. And what appears to be the case is that the removal of masking protections in schools created these situations where there were concerns about safety, there were concerns about risk. And so they weren't willing to have these masking protections, and also not willing to provide the appropriate accommodations. And I think one of the things that's clear through a lot of these policies is this thread of ableism in the policy making, that there's just not consideration and appropriate accommodations, and in some cases such as this, not even following the law that is supposed to protect people with disabilities, that is supposed to provide accommodation. So it's just unacceptable. I wish it was more surprising, but unfortunately that people with disabilities would be able to speak to this more than myself, but the ableism in terms of policies and just lived experiences is all around us.
And I guess just one last question here, in sort of the big picture sense, going back to, you know, it seems like a long time ago now, but those again, so-called Freedom Convoy protests that took over Ottawa, And, you know, a lot of the rhetoric that we see, especially online, on Facebook and so on, comes down to this sort of, I guess, question or dichotomy between individual freedom on one hand, and then caution for when it comes to public health, sort of a precautionary principle about people's health. So I guess the question for people might be, is it better to err on the side of freedom or caution when it comes to these questions? And just want to get your thoughts on that and this kind of sort of ever bubbling kind of war of words and kind of culture war that seems to have emerged around this issue of masking.
I mean, often when it's framed that way, there's kind of this false dichotomy that as if wearing a mask means that I have no freedoms. Like, I think that's not true. And, you know, over the last 2 years, a lot of us have worn masks a lot of the time. And I still wear a mask whenever I'm in a public place. And I'm going to continue to do so for the time being. You know, this won't last forever, and I think this would have been a debate before the pandemic, making everyone wear masks for no reason. Okay, that wouldn't have made sense, but right now there's a really good reason. We're still in a pandemic, and we should be using these public health tools. It's a little unsettling to me that masks have become so politicized. It's kind of like politicizing hand washing. It's again, it's a tool that we have that we know has been in wide use before, like I said, doctors and nurses wearing them in operating rooms and things like that. But there's what concerns me is just the level of disinformation, and the discourse that it has been online, but we did see it with the convoys, and then we also saw governments change all their policies really quickly after the convoys and not take a measured approach like the World Health Organization was advising. They said, whoa, let's like slowly change things. Instead, they said, we're getting rid of all these protections. So, you know, it's very concerning to see that influence. From what I can see, it looks like that influenced public health policy, especially in the absence of a really clear, well-reasoned you know, evidence, which the you know, child and youth advocate says like that wasn't there.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to speak to me today, Ms. Minton. Anything else to add briefly?
I guess one thing I would just add is that there are experts in epidemiology. The majority of pediatricians in the province, there are, this isn't just coming from, you know, the Greens who are trying to advocate for the best public health policy possible. We're listening to the experts, like the pediatricians, like the epidemiologists, and calling for, you know, protection for the most vulnerable in the community. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Sure. Okay, well, I'll leave it at that for now. So, thanks again, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much.
All
Take
right,
care.
you too. Bye now.
Bye.